right, final hour of a Thursday show, 9 o'clock, December 2nd, Jocks 94.5. Always appreciate you tuning in. And as we do each and every Thursday, we welcome in the coach, Wim Sanderson. Thanks to our friends at Piggly Wiggly. I faced it all, and I stood tall, and did it my way. Coach, always great.
To talk to a basketball coach doing all this football stuff, isn't it?
No, we always enjoy your insight. We always enjoy what you think about certain games, certain things that have taken place. Coming off just an unbelievable weekend, rivalry weekend last week. One of the better Iron Bowls we've seen in a long time. Comes down to the wire, Michigan, Ohio State. Not ultimately competitive in the last few minutes, but just an excellent football game. Just top to bottom. Bedlam was unreal. Just a fantastic weekend. What were your thoughts of just everything that took place last weekend in college?
Well, the Alabama-Auburn game was an unbelievable game. Auburn does a terrific job of you can tell after the first 5 minutes of the game that Auburn's going to be in the game, and they were, and of course Alabama had some injuries, but they were ready to play, and you know, you end up in a situation where you don't know when your offensive coordinator and your head coach is an offensive guy, and your offensive coordinator runs the show. And those two don't hit it off, whatever happened, where they should have gone for two or whatever. I thought that was one of the great games that I've ever seen. I've never seen a 100-yard stuff that they did getting the football down the field with four fourth downs in that game. It was quite shocking to me. And then for Michigan to run through Ohio State like Epsom salts through a widow woman, I've never seen anything like that. They ran through them. It's unbelievable. And I didn't think that. Ohio State would have all kind of problems. So we've focused now, I guess, on whether Cincinnati's going to be in. What about the Alabama-Georgia game? It's interesting to me for you guys to tell me, Cole, I think that Alabama changed two of their offensive linemen in that game at the halftime to try to make it better. Is that correct?
Yeah. Dalcourt came out at center, and Seth McLaughlin went in. You could tell Dalcourt was limping pretty good, and then Owens went back in at right tackle later in that game for Damian George. So he had been at right tackle earlier. So yeah, kind of moving some pieces around. I think one more due to injury, the other due more to performance.
Yeah, I just wonder, and we're just talking about not trying to cut anybody up, but if you're going to let somebody go, an offensive or defensive coordinator, I've always felt it was a little bit better to let 3 or 4 or 5 days slide, and then call them in, and then make an announcement that we've visited and we feel like we need to make a change, rather than do it so quickly now. There may not be anything to what I said, and you may totally disagree. And some people say, well, if he's going to be gone, he's going to be gone. But, you know, it kind of bugged me a little bit. I don't know Mike Bobo at all. I know he had a kid that was going to play at Auburn. It was at one time. Any comment on that you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think the scenario there went was probably one that Coach Harsin knew that he was going to make that move.
Okay.
And then I think with the early signing period, you might not have enough time to handle it a different way. So, you got to – that's why we're seeing kids go in the portal during the season. That's why we've seen I think it was almost 300 up yesterday afternoon, just this week, that had gone in. So, I think everybody's rushing towards that early signing day. And if you know you're going to do it and you wait, that gives you less time to talk to your recruits about what you might be doing next. Unfortunately, there's a lot of things in college football right now that revolve around that day because of where it falls
right
on the calendar.
And signing dates are just killers for us. And, you know, I was against the transfer portal from day one. But I'm also, and I don't know how you do this. I want your answers. I'm also against calling your team in and telling them that you're going somewhere else when they have a shot to be in the Final Four, like Notre Dame. It's a long shot. But to make a very – and I understand that money's involved and individual thoughts for your family's involved because they may be saying to you, you take the money now, take the deal now, we're going somewhere else. But to me, that's as hurtful to me as the transfer portal is.
It's hard to argue with any of that. I mean, the transfer portal to me, there is some value to it. The problem is right now there's over 100 guys going in a day. And they're not going to find it. They're not going to find a home.
No.
And I, frankly, hey, you're a grown man at 18. If you can vote and serve our country, you are allowed to make big boy decisions. And sometimes you have to pay the consequences for said decision. If you have an inflated sense of self, there might not be a home for you, and you could vacate a scholarship quickly, which is terrifying to me. But at the same time, it's just the reality of the decision that you have to make, Coach. When you look at how you would evaluate kids that enter the portal at this point of the season, would it impact on your evaluation?
Yeah, it's so very, very difficult just to know exactly what the right way is. And then we turn around this morning with the committee saying that they could not come to a conclusion on how many teams should be in the playoff, and that they were going to push that to January. And so we don't know if it's going to be 12, 8, or back to the 4 or 6 or whatever it might be. So we've got, along with the transfer portal, with changing leagues, which I don't think is as good as you guys do probably. I just think that we've heard the Big 12, ACC is not going to be, is Clemson, and Clemson's got to stay good for it to be really good. Now maybe the Pac-12 would be better with a new coach going out there, but it's quite different for all of us.
Wim Sanderson joins us every Thursday, thanks to our friends at Piggly Wiggly. Let's fast forward to this weekend. Actually, you know what? I want to go back and ask you another Iron Bowl question quickly, because there are some folks that are discussing, what Georgia had to do against Georgia Tech, and that most of the starters are out at or just after halftime, Alabama having to go to 4 overtimes. When you had games such as that where maybe the physical exertion was much more than what your opponent had with the same break, did you change practice? Did you change your routine at all going into that next game?
I did. I rested a day more than most people. I was a big rest guy. I wanted my guys to have their legs, especially in basketball. And it was important to me that they do that. Now, I wanted to see film, and I wanted them to see what they did. I wanted to see the matchups, and I wanted to see who they were going to be guarding by going to a meetings. In Coach Bryant's day, he'd have an offensive staff meeting for hours, and then a defensive staff meeting, those kinds of things. But for me personally, I changed. I rested a great deal. And I know this is not the same. I was in 9 finals of the SEC for the tournament championship. I played in those finals 9 times, and for me, it was a huge deal. Now I know it's not football. I got it, but it was huge to me because we were going to be the basketball champions if we won that back then. And the pressure that I had on myself and my team, I wanted them to be ready to play. We won 5 times and lost 4. Should have won 6 and lost 3, but we didn't. But it was a rest period for us to be really rested for everything that we did. I'm a little bit different than some people. People want to go. The longer you go in the season, the longer you work, you practice. I went the very opposite.
Coach, when you think about kind of formulating a practice to make sure it's not too big, or a game that's not too big, obviously it's a little different because of the short turnaround that you have in basketball in a championship setting. Shoot, you have 24 hours to forget what just happened and be ready to rock and roll again. But if you did have a longer time between the final game, say the semifinals, and 5 or 6 or 7 days before the finals, how would you try to formulate a message to the guys to make sure that they don't put too much on it?
Well, I would simply rest. I would have my assistant coaches visit with each one of them, each group, or the linemen or whatever, and talk to them about everything that we had you know, the mistakes that we had made, look at the films that we had made and what we where we needed to improve. And I would not, I don't know if I'm answering this question right or not for you, but I think I'm answering the same way a little bit. But I would continue to go on with a lot of learning and teaching and getting things as best I could. The biggest problem that Alabama has right now is they don't have any players. And I know that's a joke, but they don't have any running backs that can even give Georgia even a dent. Kind of switching over a little bit, but I would just go and you know, towards the end, I would say to my guys, we're going to work an hour and 15 minutes. We're going to work the hardest hour and 15 minutes you've ever seen. But I would do that very, very late after I had taught them for 3 or 4 days the things that we had done wrong.
All right, Coach, let's roll into this weekend. If you go by the Rubik's Cube, which we just had before you came on, it looks like it's going to be a very competitive slate of games. Couple coin toss games out there.
Let me tell you what I've done, Cole. You're going to laugh at me. I got a double blue plate.
Let's hear it.
And this will probably be the last time I blue plate stuff. and I'm doing that because there'll be some people who'll be mad at me. So those people who are mad at me you can take both these games and use them. You cannot use either one of them, or you can use one of them as your blue plate if you're inclined to do something like that. So what I have done, I have decided for this weekend, I'm going to take Michigan and Georgia. And by taking Georgia, you know, it hacks everybody off because I coached at Alabama for a long time. If you don't like it and you're hacked off at me, then go take Michigan. If you don't like Michigan and Iowa, then go to the house and don't take anybody. So that's sort of what I have done for this week. And it's, people are saying, well, that's not right. You should be tight. Well, it's right to me because I don't want to hear all that flack about me picking one particular game and a game that everybody around here, you know, is all worked up about the game anyway. So I de-worked them.
There you go. Coach, we always appreciate you taking some time to join us. We know every week it's due to our friends at Piggly Wiggly.
Well, it is due to Piggly Wiggly and you guys as well. But Piggly Wiggly is a great company. They have great food. 41, I go out there, Homewood. Andy and Stanley do terrific jobs. Piggly Wiggly have been perfect for Birmingham and the state of Alabama for a number of years. And you guys, I enjoy you guys. You really give me some football information that I, as you know, I don't know. And y'all give stuff that, you know, I don't realize this or that. Both of you do then. And I appreciate you and appreciate being on the show, and I hope you have a good week, and should be a very interesting weekend.
Absolutely. Coach, we appreciate you, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Thank you.
Wim Sanderson joins us every week. Thanks to our friends at Piggly Wiggly right there on the Bud Light Hotline. It feels like 11's a lot for Michigan, but there's also a lot of confidence with Michigan in this game. Rubik's Kubik had a +1 for Michigan, so a little bit of confidence there, but not necessarily a comfortable win. I just wonder, though, Greg, are some of the strengths that Iowa brings to the table still a little bit disguised by how good they were early in the year? They were running the ball better early in the year than they have been here late. The turnovers got to +12 like week 3 or 4. And so, I mean, that's just kind of carried over in to the second half of the season. I wonder what about this Iowa team should we look at other than being able to sort of shrink the game, which I think Michigan can also do, and the fact that McNamara is a little bit of a gunslinger. I think McNamara is the wild card in this game if you're going to go against Michigan in this game and in any playoff game that they play, because, man, when he's hot, he makes some crazy good throws, but he also takes some unnecessary chances with how he throws the ball and where he throws the ball at times. Like, he had a couple really nice throws against Ohio State. I mean, really nice throws. But he'll get on the run, and you can see him get a little bit confident, maybe too confident at times, and sometimes take unnecessary risks. They haven't gone against him a ton this year, but it would be something moving forward that I would think could be of concern. And this is an Iowa defense that can take the ball away, +13 in the turnovers. So Iowa's not really going to beat themselves. The problem is, if Michigan creates some explosives, And I do think they have the receivers to do it and the backs to do it and the quarterback to do it. If I was giving up a few of those, then they get behind early. There's not going to be a lot that they can do about it.
The thing about Iowa is they actually have been a team that's come back from behind on a few different occasions, which is funny because they don't seem like the type that could do that. But they've made a play on special teams. In the Nebraska game last week is a great example. Make a play on special teams, all of a sudden momentum flips, then Iowa just pours it on after a couple turnovers. You look at their performance against Penn State earlier in the year. Get down early, no problem whatsoever. Second half adjustments, turn them over a couple times. Obviously, Clifford going out didn't hurt their cause that night, but they end up winning the game in comeback fashion. So this is one of those teams where if Michigan gets an early lead, and I would anticipate that, Michigan's a far superior team, I would anticipate them being very careful in the second half, knowing that one change, one mistake will allow Iowa to get back in it, and being the momentum team that they are, that's not a team that you want to give life to. So will be very interesting to see exactly what is in store for Michigan that night, or that, yeah, that night, because it's a nighttime game. Are they the littlest bit hungover? That's, I think, the other thing, too, beyond the X's and the O's, that is worth taking into consideration. They just beat their rival for the first time in 7 or 8 years, and a lot of people around Ann Arbor are still, at this moment, celebrating that performance last week. So does the team reflect that? I hope not, but if they do, they're going to be in for a dogfight on Saturday night.
As they should. It was a massive win, but obviously, as far as the team's concerned, you got to turn the page. And I just, the Iowa rushing attack has been such a roller coaster. It was great early, and then it tapered off in the middle of the year, and then they had a good game in, and then the last two games have been good. I just, against this defense, I don't see it just going. And then, of course, we got both quarterbacks. Last time out against Nebraska, didn't think Petras was going to play. Padilla goes. Petras gets in there, does some nice things. So there are just a lot of question marks around this Iowa football team as to what are they going to be, and then can they be good at some of the things that have helped them win games at different points in the time in the season. I find that hard to believe that they can be great with those things against this Michigan team. I kind of don't see it because of what Michigan's been and how consistent they've been with who they are and what their makeup's been across the course of the entire season. If your makeup is like mine and arthritis is an issue for you, your CBD store potentially can help. Arthritis for you or your pet, they've helped me and the biggest dog in our family, Lola. She had some issue with arthritis in her back knees, about a week's regimen of CBD. She was almost right back to normal. Now she's getting up and down the stairs with no problem. But your CBD store has multiple products that can help you with that, with sleep, with waking up and feeling better, and now also weight loss with the Trim by SunMed that's in stock today at the largest brick-and-mortar CBD retailer in the world. They have the USDA-certified organic oil supplements. That stamp seal is going to be on their products. So go check out one of their locations today, Highway 280 by Bailey Brothers, 150 by the Cajun Cleaver, Trustville just off 459, and now downtown in Five Points. Your CBD store, where good health hits home. So championship weekend, we know, is right around the corner. We know that's coming up, but also going to continue to break down the games, talk about some of the coaching searches that are still happening. Bruce Feldman has news on that of Fox Sports. He'll be with us when we come back right here on Mac and Cube in the morning. All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. It is Thursday, December the 2nd. Listen online, jocksfm.com. Cowboys at Saints tonight on Fox at 7:20 p.m. for your NFL action coming up tonight. You'll be able to dial into a little bit of football there as the boys are in New Orleans, GMAC.
Taysom Hill getting the start for the New Orleans Saints. He was 3-1 last year as the starting quarterback. Saints are 9-2-1. Against the spread in their last 12 games as a home underdog. So something to consider, but obviously have some fun. Speaking of having some fun, you know what's fun is getting the great deals that you get right there when you go visit GMC's Dealer of the Year. On Highway 31 in Coleman, you can also shop online at BillSmithBuickGMC.com to deliver it right to your driveway. Some dealers claim to be number one, but there's 1,800 GMC dealers. General Motors says Bill Smith is number one. You can go by, see him. You can get 2022 Acadia all-wheel drive Denali. The ultimate package now. The dual skyscape sunroof, the rear camera mirror, the adaptive ride control, the adaptive cruise control. Other places, you're paying nearly $55,000. Well, at Bill Smith, when you apply all the rebates, you're getting it for $50,990. That's a brand new car, 2022. It's deals like that that keep people coming back for the last 65 years. Go see Andy Cole and Jonathan Yeager. Those are my guys. Andy's the GM. Jonathan's the sales manager. 75% of their business repeat customers. That's because you have a superior customer experience every time you shop with Bill Smith Buick GMC. Whether it's online or you go see them on Highway 31, you can't go wrong at Bill Smith Buick GMC.
I'm going to welcome in Bruce Feldman. Fox Sports joins us now on the Bud Light Hotline. Follow him on Twitter at Bruce Feldman CFB. Bruce, you were all over the Notre Dame news last night, and that's not just with Marcus Freeman becoming the head coach, but Tommy Rees staying on as the offensive coordinator. What else do you have just about that current Notre Dame staff and who might be in and if anyone at all potentially is going to be out?
Morning, guys. Yeah, Alabama native Lance Taylor, I expect to stay in South Bend as well. He's the run game coordinator, really good running back coach. Mike Elston, who has been with Brian Kelly basically for almost two decades, had been with him from Central Michigan to Cincinnati, followed him to Notre Dame. He actually, from what I was told, was down in Baton Rouge at one point yesterday, but he announced that he's staying. So I think you've gotten a lot of really key pieces for Marcus Freeman as he takes over this program. You know, the strength coach who's really well respected, he decided to stay. As you mentioned, Cole, Tommy Rees announced he's staying. You know, it feels a little bit like when Ryan Day was elevated, because Ryan Day really was able to hit the ground running because he kept the best parts of the Urban Meyer regime, which was Mickey Marotti, the strength coach, you know, really good recruiting department, and a bunch of, obviously, Larry Johnson on one side of the ball on the line. So I think this is really good for Marcus Freeman. I think the challenges are, you guys obviously talked to a lot of people and have been around him too. He's really impressive still. You were talking about a guy in his mid-30s, and Notre Dame is just a very complicated, big job. But it's going to be interesting to see, because we know that recruits are really, really excited about this. So we'll see how it plays out from here.
When you look at the moves that have been made, not just at Notre Dame, but also at Oklahoma, I've said, and I'm curious your take on this, there's no such thing as a destination job anymore. The destinations are those with the biggest and deepest pockets. So help me understand what Oklahoma and Notre Dame are now in the grand scheme of things, knowing that they just had coaches leave at Oklahoma for the first time in nearly 75 years and at Notre Dame first time in nearly 100 years.
Yeah, and it's crazy when you put that kind of historical context to it. I think it's what you just said, Greg. I mean, I think there are great jobs, and these are all to some degree great jobs. And I think the challenges are, you know, in Lincoln Riley's case, I think you had a guy who had always kind of been at least intrigued by the lure of the USC program and it having just kind of a tilted playing field in terms of the rest of the league. There are other blue bloods, certainly in college football. I mean, you played for one. There's one in Columbus. There's a handful of others. But those programs also have somebody who's either very similar in terms of historical pull or recruiting base, but also the commitment to playing football at the highest level. USC is really alone in that regard in the Pac-12 South. It's just different. And so I think on that sense, I get it. You know, with the case of Brian Kelly, from everything I'd heard from my reporting and my colleagues reporting at The Athletic, he had really spent a bunch of time just butting heads with the administration, where things that he was pushing for, which honestly a lot of other top programs have and they don't think twice about asking for, either take a lot of time to get done or just haven't gotten done. And so I think what you look at is, hey, when he talked about alignment, you know, he's talking about it exactly in terms of, hey, they're going to get stuff done for football. And I think that is really appealing because the one thing both of these guys have in common, being Lincoln and Brian Kelly, is neither one won a national title, right? And so it's not to say that they couldn't if they stayed longer, but I think that is a reality. And I think in Brian Kelly's case, he looked over in Baton Rouge, he was like, man, the last three guys here have all won national titles. Why can't I do that?
I talked to an FBS head coach yesterday, and he said to me, and I'd be curious to get your reaction to this, Bruce. He said to me, I don't blame Lincoln Riley at all. It's a lot easier to put your head on the pillow having just played in the Pac-12 each and every Saturday night as opposed to going into the meat grinder that is the SEC. He said that this decision was exclusively about the fact that he was not totally on board for the SEC move and felt like the quality of life and or the challenges that would come with joining the SEC, they're not worth it. So leave, take the easier job, take the path of least resistance, and you can still chase a championship. How accurate do you think that is?
You know, I haven't heard that directly from anybody close to Lincoln Riley, so I'll say that. I know from similar, and you guys hear this too, like the recruiting level in the SEC is such a dogfight and so frenetic and so cutthroat that I think that it is not for everybody. You know, I know plenty of coaches who are really good coaches who are like, yeah, that's, I don't want to deal with that madness.
Your quality of life's not, I mean, no disrespect, your quality of life's not as good. I'm just being like, it's your life is your job.
Greg, there's like basically on the West Coast here, there is one guy who is going 1,000 miles an hour at the recruiting level, and he's basically taken what, you know, the Saban blueprint and moved it to Eugene, Oregon. And that guy is, you know, Mario Cristobal's a lot like Ed Ogeron in that, where he doesn't golf in the off season. He's all about recruiting, right? And so even we saw this, you know, with the Dan Mullen comment, is whether it was like, you know, was it taken out of context or not when he's talking about recruiting? There are certain guys who are just, that's what they are so wired for. They are all about the chase and everything else. And it's not to say that guys who golf don't care about recruiting. I'm not trying to make that. But I still think there are certain people who that's just, you know, that's for them. And other guys who are like, you know what, I don't need that. You know, and I think that's something, quite honestly, that has probably deterred a handful of coaches as we've gotten even further down this rabbit hole of going, yeah, I don't know how long I want to stay in this profession at this pace because I can't sustain it.
Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports joining us on the Bud Light Hotline, talking coaching moves, coaching changes. What do you think is next for Oklahoma? There are a lot of names that folks feel confident about speculating, but are there one, two, three that you feel like are realistically towards the top of the list?
I would imagine, you know, Brent Venables is a name to keep an eye on. He obviously spent a long time there as a top assistant. He's a really good recruiter. He's done a really good job at Clemson. I wouldn't be surprised if they went that direction. The other thing that, you know, I've thought a bunch about is Joe Castiglione really hasn't had to make a lot of head coaching hires at college football. The two that he's made, Bob Stoops and Lincoln Riley, one offensive guy, one defensive guy, neither was a sitting head coach, you know, so I don't think he would be deterred by, well, this guy hasn't done it before if we believe in him. You know, I don't know if it would get to the point where Shane Beamer becomes a candidate. We know that they liked him in his time in Norman as an assistant. We know people have been impressed by how Shane has handled, you know, the brief time that he has been a head coach in South Carolina. I think he's probably on their list as well. And beyond that, I don't know. Do you go look at a Mike Elko? He's been in the mix for other Power 5 head coaching jobs, one of the best defensive coordinators in college football. I mean, so again, these are all guys. But then to me, the wild card out there is you have a three-time Big 12 Coach of the Year in Matt Campbell sitting out there, and he's done an amazing job at Iowa State. From my sources, he was the guy that USC was all set to meet with on Sunday before Lincoln Riley jumped at that job. I mean, Matt Campbell's beaten Lincoln Riley and OU a couple of times. You know, it would surprise me if you had told me, you know, 2 months ago that a lot of big jobs would come open and Matt Campbell wouldn't be getting one. And, you know, he is going to be choosy. I know there are certain places he may not want to be. But again, I think that would be a call that, if you're Joe Castiglione and you got a make, just to see, hey, how interested would you be in coming here?
This is going to – I'm just curious because what I heard Bob Stoops is making the hire. Not saying that Joe Castiglione won't be heavily involved, but whoever it is going to have a real close relationship with Bob Stoops. How accurate is that based on what you've heard?
I think Bob's going to have a lot of influence. You know, like, look what Bob's doing right now. Bob is crisscrossing basically the Southwest, recruiting, and that program and that community is reeling from the Lincoln news. And it's different than what's going on in South Bend because you've had a bunch of really top assistants already come out here to Southern California with Lincoln, moved on. You have, you know, a flock of 2023 top recruits who've already decommitted and probably going to end up at USC. And with the portal, this transition becomes a lot more volatile, you know, in college athletics. And you could, you know, does Caleb Williams decide, hey, I came here to play for Lincoln, I'm going to go there to play for Lincoln, you know? So I think Bob's role as a stabilizer and the guy who's pointed out, hey, you know, OU football was great before Lincoln Riley came to Norman, and, you know, it's going to, you know, there's a lot of statues out in our stadium, not just of one guy, by the way. So I would be surprised if he didn't have a ton of influence. I mean, ultimately, Joe is going to be the boss, but, you know, I don't know how you don't listen to Bob Stoops, because, by the way, Bob was the one who had a big role in Lincoln getting there and getting the job.
Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. I don't know if any of us anticipated that we would have a single cycle with the name recognition openings that we've had: Florida, Notre Dame, USC, Oklahoma, LSU, Virginia Tech, Washington, on and on and on. There are a couple of schools still that have vacancies to fill, Bruce, but are we done? Do you anticipate more openings at more meaningful college football programs this offseason?
I think the only one that has the potential to be a little bit of a splinter one would be is if Miami popped open. You know, they're still winding their way through the athletic director search. And, you know, look, I think there's some people at Miami inside you know, the Miami leadership part who were really frustrated with the AD, Blake James, and Manny was part of that. Manny Diaz was part of that hire and how football went. Now, the season, you know, perked up a little bit, you know, after a really rocky start. But I think there's a lot of people there who are not happy with how things are going. I mean, as of late last week, I had heard from people I trust that it was looking like Manny was going to keep the job. I'm not sure that that's, you know, going to play out that way necessarily. And if they, I think ultimately, if Miami knew, hey, we could get Mario Cristobal to come home, I think you would have two big coaching moves happening. You'd have Miami coming open, and then potentially you'd have Oregon coming open. And if it didn't work out for Mario, I don't know. Maybe, you know, we know that Lane Kiffin has always had interest in the Miami job, and there's a lot of people around Miami who would like to have Lane Kiffin as the head coach. So beyond those, you know, that kind of subplot of it, I don't think we're going to get more stuff spring open, but we've already seen a lot of crazy stuff, so you never say never.
Bruce, always appreciate the time. Great stuff, as always, keeping us updated with all the coaching maneuvers, everything happening, different things taking place. Look forward to having you back again soon.
Hey, by the way, Cole, I always tune in for the insightful stuff on the trenches. I did not expect Shaq lyrics to break out from the sideline. I thought that was one of the coolest things. And like,
forgettable
I
moment.
On my couch. I don't know how... Hey, I don't know how old he was when the Fushnikins were a thing. I know he had hair back then, but just the idea of that, I did not expect it. That was awesome.
Yeah, I think I was.
See you guys.
I think I was 16 when that album dropped. So, yeah, it was pretty impactful. So, appreciate that, Bruce. Great stuff, as always. Bruce Feldman joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. When we come back, obviously, we're going to begin to get into some of the games this weekend. We haven't spent enough time breaking those down today. So we'll do it more next right here on McElroy and Cubic in the morning. All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Cubic in the morning. Last segment of a Thursday, December 2nd. As we continue to move on, we're going to talk Championship Saturday just a little bit more as not only today progresses, but obviously tomorrow. We've got John Parker Wilson, Chris Felica coming up for you on the show on Friday, as we will go max ball tomorrow and dive into all these championship games, GMAC. Which underdog can be the bigger pest for these favorites coming up on Championship Saturday?
Well, we don't like pests, but we do like underdogs. Pests, however, we don't want to deal with those, especially as the weather's starting to change and things are beginning to cool and the dry place that is your house. Well, guess what? Those pests are trying to infiltrate. Don't let them by calling Wayne's. They've been in business since 1973, currently serving over 100,000 customers in Birmingham and communities across Alabama. They have that Quality Pro certified designation. Only top 5% of pest control companies in the world, in the U.S., have that designation. They're the number one rated pest control provider in Birmingham with over 1,100 Google reviews. Yeah, they control your pests. They do so much more. So you need to call them and get them to take care of you just like they take care of me in all aspects of my life. 866-WAYNES-1. Mention offer code JOCKS. Get $60 off your initial EnviroPest treatment. That's 866-WAYNES-1. Give the pros at Wayne's a call at 866-WAYNES-1.
All right, so Championship Saturday, we begin to discuss multiple games that are going to be coming up this weekend. Obviously, a couple of games on Friday night as well. That Pac-12 title game is one that's interesting. Rubik's Cube goes with Utah, and there are just not a lot of things that lead to them playing sloppy football, or not having their act together, so to speak, as they head into this Oregon game. I look at Utah, Greg, as a team that had some issues early in the season. They kind of got them ironed out. They were really banged up, especially along the offensive line early in the year. And then had a bit of a slip up at Oregon State, a team that physically was able to match up with them. But then have just been rolling ever since. I mean, they haven't had too many competitive games since they played the Beavers. And they've been fairly dominant here down the stretch. Oregon, on the other hand, you wonder exactly what they're going to be, what they're going to give you. The performance last time around is just one that I can't get out of my mind. It's not the fact that you lost to Utah. Yes, it was on the road. I get it. But you were embarrassed at Utah. So if you want to even it out a little bit from a neutral site standpoint, that's fine. But, I mean, I don't see how this game ends up going the way of the Oregon Ducks. Anthony Brown's going to have to be lights out. I think they're going to have a more balanced attack. But can that Oregon front four be enough against a Utah rushing attack that was just flat-out dominant last time around? And went for 208 on the ground. Tavian Thomas was great, had three rushing touchdowns. They averaged over 4 yards a carry, and they made Anthony Brown's life miserable. They made that Oregon rushing attack's life miserable. Oregon couldn't get it done on offense, and there's just not a lot that leads to me anticipating that they're just going to find a way to get it done this time.
Yeah, and I don't understand how – I know we all get caught up in the, the rematch and it's hard to beat a team twice. No, it's really not. Not if you're better. I mean, I'll play whoever you want twice if I know I have the better team. So I look at this and have a very difficult time thinking that Oregon – I think they can be competitive. I just don't see them winning the game. And that is – pretty interesting how many people still think that Oregon, well, it's now at a neutral site. That's a big difference. I don't see it that way. Same thing goes for Louisiana when they're facing Appalachian State. Oh, they don't have Billy Napier. Okay, so he's worth four touchdowns? Are you sure? I mean, I don't see it that way, man. I look at the teams, who's better? Who's better at the line of scrimmage? Who has a mental edge? And line of scrimmage more often than not determines who's going to win these championship games. So give me Utah, give it to me all day long. And I can't find an edge for Oregon right now. I just can't.
I'm with you. ACC championship game, obviously not one that has a ton of meaning as far as the college football playoff is concerned. I guess it is kind of cool that we're going to have a new ACC champion. Been a while since we've been able to say that. Now we know what Wake Forest is capable of offensively. We know Kenny Pickett and company can also move the ball as well, but I obviously, and I don't think this should be a big surprise, have a lot more confidence in Pitt's defense than I do Wake's defense. Do you look at this game as just being that simple that, yeah, both teams will probably be able to score, but Wake most likely will not be able to stop Pitt from scoring, considering what they've done on defense the majority of this year?
Yeah, I mean, Wake to me, here's the problem with Wake, is that slow developing mesh against teams that have a little bit of an advantage in the trenches that can overpower you, the pocket will just collapse. And I just look at the Clemson game for Wake, and I have horrors, right? I look at how Pitt played North Carolina, especially in the first 30 minutes of that football game, just overpowering an offensive line. And I worry about Wake being able to hold up, because I do think this Pitt defensive front can get after you a little bit, and they'll have a plan. I mean, I really like Dave Clawson. I think he'll make it tough on Pitt, and I think it could become a shootout very quickly in the second half. But I have a real difficult time thinking that Wake is going to be able to hold up along the offensive front from start to finish in this one. They're going to have to use some tempo. They're going to have to pick up first downs, and they're going to have to wear them out. And if they don't, then they could have a long day potentially.
Never a long day when your kids are able to walk outside in the backyard and jump on their playground or fort thanks to Backyard Adventures. They've got them all assembled right there at Cahaba Valley Road, so you can go jump on them, climb on them, swing on them, test them all out, and then you can add whatever options you want, because Jeff and the guys at Backyard Adventures will customize your playground or fort that they're going to come assemble for you in your backyard. That's right. No work for you. You don't have to put it together. You're not going to lift a hammer, a screwdriver, a drill, anything. They're going to put it together for you in your backyard. It's going to last a lifetime. If you move, they'll come move it for you. And obviously, you get to customize it so the kids get exactly what they want. Deal here is, if you want it for Christmas, you need to act now by calling 408-4386 or backyardalabama.com. The final truck has been delivered there, Backyard Adventures, for Christmas delivery. They can still get one assembled for the holidays in your backyard, but there's going to be a limited supply. Part of that supply for you could be the display sale happening now at Backyard Adventures. That's right. All the playgrounds and forts that are already set up, you can go purchase one of those if you want. Save a little bit of money. Have that in the backyard for your child. So visit BackyardAlabama.com today or call 408-4386. I'm with you. I think Pitt's defense, that defensive front, 46 sacks, second most in the FBS. Oklahoma State, the only team that has more than they do. I think that's too problematic for Wake Forest. And I do think Sam Hartman's going to get some. I think he'll find his. I think they'll find ways to move the ball. But Kenny Pickett, Jordan Addison and company, they're going to get theirs as well. So I feel pretty confident in Pitt in that game. Obviously, there's not going to be extra reasons for people to tune in and see it and want to know exactly what happens because the lack of playoff implications that it's going to have. But just say this on a side note about this game. Pitt and Wake both win in 10 games this season. That's pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think a lot of us, we knew Kenny Pickett was going to have a good year, and we knew that Pitt could be solid, but a chance to get to 11 wins and win an ACC title, that's remarkable. And I'm not sure many people had Wake at double-digit wins this year at all.
No way. They got to give, obviously, Dave Clawson already won ACC Coach of the Year, won it in a landslide. The guy that finished second, they got to tabulate the points. I think there's 64 votes total. It's 64 votes total. There's 50 media members and then 14 ACC coaches. Dave Clawson won ACC Coach of the Year with 49 out of the 64 votes. Pat Narduzzi finished second with 10. So these are definitely two unbelievable coaching performances this year, and they deserve to be commended. These guys have done a great job with their rosters and have put together, a plan that a lot of people can kind of look to. Veteran players, go hit the transfer portal, add pieces where you need them, and hope that you have a good quarterback, because if you have a good quarterback, you certainly have a chance at all levels of football.
Your plan for lunch should be Tostadas Tex-Mex with a twist, that Mexican pizza, pomegranate guacamole, street corn queso, Conecuh queso, all available right there in downtown Homewood across from our friends at Soho Social. How and the guys will take good care of you. If you want to check out the menu, theflattaco.com, theflattaco.com. And also, you got specials all week long, but the Tex-Mex brunch Saturday and Sunday morning at Tostadas right there on the square in downtown Homewood. Tomorrow, 7 to 10 a.m., Max Ball. We're going into each and every one of these games. We'll break them all down, as well as having Chris Felica and John Parker Wilson with you. Three-man front next right here on Jocks 94.5.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.